Greetings and salutations, everyone. I am AC2GS. My name is Roy, and this is the Limar Technical Net. The Limar Technical Net has been doing this Sunday nights at 8 p.m. since 1982. And as always, I like to tell people how to contact us and the different types of web pages that we offer. So as always, if you have any questions and you can't get on to the Technical Net one way or the other, you can send us the questions via email, or you can suggest topics for discussion, or you can refute something that I said. I'm always looking for people who have differing opinions. As long as you have good references, just as you think of it, you know, doesn't make it so. But if you have good references, feel free. If you would like to offer me puzzles, we like to offer science puzzles to people. So if you have any in your back pocket, you can email them to me. And if you'd like me to tap Paul of Space Report fame on the shoulder and ask him to take a look at a website or a video, or YouTube, what have you, and make a comment, the email address to reach both of us is mailbag@ac2gs.com. Again, mailbag@ac2gs.com. Links to articles. I've already put in a couple of articles. There's a very nice little article with pretty pictures. I can't really do pretty pictures on the radio, so I posted the link. And also, some people are very interested in the comet Neowise, so I posted a link on an article about comet Neowise. So you can get to those via just typing into your browser, roy.ac2gs.com. As always, there is a chat room available to you. You can type in your browser, chat.ac2gs.com, and that will bring you to the chat room. If you have any friends who don't have a radio, who don't have a link to access the audio stream, I provide one. You point your browser once again at technet.ac2gs.com, and that will bring up an audio stream of our conversations here. And as always, MikeKC2NJI has a website called amateurradio.tv in which he's archived the Technical Net going back to 2006 in September. So there's a lot of great tech nets that are recorded for posterity. Please check it out one of these days. We will have the presence of Andy, WA2CDL. Andy's Corner will make another appearance tonight, and I'm looking forward to that. I will drop for a second, and then I will ask if anyone has any questions of a technical nature. I'll be right back. Okie doke. Again, this is AC2GS. My name is Roy, and this is the Limar Technical Net. If you have any questions of a technical nature or topics you would like to discuss or comments that you would like to make of a technical nature, please give me your first name and your call sign.
WB2GXM, Rich, and yes.
KD2OGB. Nothing right now, but I'll think of something, Roy.
Okay, Rich and Craig recognize. Anyone else want to get online for tonight? Any questions or any topics that you'd like to discuss? Okay, I guess we'll start with Rich and see how the night goes on. Rich, welcome back. What's your question for tonight?
Thank you, Roy. AC2GS in the group, WB2GXM. I was given a 12-volt, 8-amp-hour SLA battery. It was originally used in a Fios installation, and it was given to me. I have no experience charging these things, so what can I charge it with? Is there a specific model and manufacturer or a general procedure or whatever, WB2GXM.
W2GGT.
Yes, W2GGT.
Whiskey 2 Tango Tango Tango. Gordon here. Good evening. Do you want me to answer the question?
Yeah, sure, Gordon, please.
Okay, so they are sealed lead acid batteries, which is a lovely thing because you can mount them in all kinds of different directions, and they're pretty forgiving. I wouldn't put more than about 14 volts on them in general on a continuous basis. And they're best off with, you know, some sort of charger that will keep, like 13.8 or even 13 volts across it, maybe through a diode. You can current limit it if you want appropriately. You shouldn't charge it more than, I wouldn't think, more than about 20% or 25% of its total capacity. So if it's 8 ampere hours, you don't want to have more than about, let's say, 2.5 going into it. But you can float them across your power supply because they are self-regulating. As long as you don't go too crazy on your voltage. So if you put 13 volts on it, it'll probably run forever. If you put 13.8, put it through a diode so you don't backfeed your power supply, and that'll make it 13.1, and you'll be very happy, and you'll build yourself an automatic cutover power supply with just a hefty diode in series with your power supply going to the battery and then onto your load. Over.
Rich, any comments? Also, what's also important is the age and the duty cycle of that battery that someone was kind enough to give you. If it's relatively new, then it's a very nice thing to have. I've had people kind of hand me over lead-acid batteries that have seen much better days. I every so often get the feeling that they do that because they don't want to dispose of it the other way, which is because it's a hazard, lead and such. In addition, you might want to check to see what kind of capacity you can charge that thing up to.
Roy, this was given to me by a fellow ham. I don't know the age of it. He doesn't know the age of it. But it seems to be in fairly good shape. So, is there a charger that I can buy, maybe from Harbor Freight or some such, that would do the job?
Yeah, you could certainly do that. They have little chargers. But you could just strap it across your power supply with a diode. Get yourself a chunky diode, and you can use it to back up your FM rig. Generally speaking, by the way, below about 11 volts, the battery shouldn't be drained, and I don't like going much below about 11.7, personally. In general, if it's an 8 ampere hour battery, you're only going to get 4 ampere hours out of it at the most, and over time you'll get a little less. Over.
Diode goes in positive lead before the power supply, I would assume.
Right, power supply, hot lead, diode feeding battery, and then straight on to the load.
Very good, thank you.
Yeah, just get yourself like a, if you're going to run an FM rig or something like that on it, get yourself like a 10 amp diode, put it on, you're only going to have to dissipate, 1 watt, probably 12 watts of power, so, that's a lot of, that can be a little warm, but, just keep it simple, do that. But, I would just set it for 13.8, put a diode on it, and call it square.
Comment.
Comment, go, and I'll stand down for net control.
Okay, thank you very much, Gordon. Rich, wish you luck on that battery. I see that they sell all kinds of a little bit overpriced equipment to go through charge and discharge cycles and send data curves to computer terminals and tell you exactly what the load is for some of these things. You know, lead acid is an old technology, but it's a sturdy one. These days I like lithium iron phosphate. It has a lower voltage discharge curve, so you can pour off more of the power before the voltage level drops below something that the radios will give you an argument about.
Believe me, if I was shopping for a new battery, I would not have been getting SLA. I would have been getting a bio-NO iron, whatever, lithium iron. But this was given to me, so I figured I'd find out what the charging options were.
You know what? The battery is big enough to be like what I call blackout coverage. When you have like an hour or two disruption in your AC mains because somebody, you know, a squirrel decides to immolate themselves or somebody has a tree branch down in an isolated way. It's good for that kind of stuff. W2TTT.
Well, as they say, any port in a storm, and it was certainly worth the money you paid for it, which I assume is free. So I wish you luck with that. And again, I have lead acid batteries that friends have given me. Some of them work out rather well, some of them not quite that well, but I wish you luck.
Comment.
Yes, comment.
K2GJEX. They sell items called battery minders or battery tenders. They are not battery chargers. A battery charger will keep on going forever until it boils all the water.
Okay, very good, Ed. I don't know. There's a lot of background noise on your signal. If you can kick up the power output, that would be great. But I think for the most part, the less expensive battery charges are basically just trickle charges, and it's not the most efficient method, and it can overheat the battery over time. So something that has a cutoff switch when it reaches a given voltage level is probably a good thing to have.
B2O, should be comment.
Yes, Greg.
Personally, I prefer wireless charging over wired because as soon as it gets to 100%, it completely cuts off. That's what I use. The phone does get significantly warm, but I tend to use wireless charging, but eventually it's not as reliable, but I prefer that because it cuts off eventually.
Okay, Craig. I mean, it's a different really subject because I think Rich is talking more about his radio equipment and cell phones with wireless connections. I mean, eventually I guess that they'll sell handy talkies that have wireless power, but I haven't seen them yet. And the thing isn't particularly the technology of the wireless mode. It's the charging safety intelligence. They've developed these very inexpensive chips that they've placed in a lot of pieces of equipment that are very smart about when to charge and when not to charge and when to stop the trickle charging and what have you. So it's not necessarily dependent upon a wireless power charging algorithm, but more of the intelligent chip behind it. But I have both. I use a lot of wired charging, obviously, but my cell phone is wireless, and I like to put it in its little cradle and have it wirelessly charged. It's probably a little bit less energy efficient, just because it takes more power to get there wirelessly than directly, but you know, just pennies.
So what do you use to charge your SLA?
I have more than a few chargers that are capable of it. I have something called a Epic Power Gate that I use as a kind of a switchover. It's very nice. You can configure it for both lead acid, which I use for the SLA, or lithium iron phosphate, which is usually the one that I use. And it does the internal switching. If it loses the battery, if it loses the power supply, it switches over to the battery almost instantaneously. I also tend to use that as a charger as well. I have a bunch of chargers from the last, you know, 10, 15, 20 years. I mean, if you've ever had lead acid batteries, inevitably you bought chargers for them.
WJTTT comment?
Yes, Gordon.
Oh, you hit the nail on the head. Let me tell you something. The Epic Power Gate, I've used other Power Gates before, and I was okay, ho-hum about them, especially with, you know, with lithiums that have internal battery management systems, and with careful application of power supplies directly across sealant acids, and those are pretty much all I use, with one exception, which is here in the truck. I'm using a pair of 6-volt golf cart batteries as auxiliary batteries in my van. And let me tell you, that Epic Power Gate is a dream. What's different about it is that it's got a solar input, as you know, and so you can run power supply, solar panels, and battery all feeding a load. And on the solar side, it's an MPPT charger, which is much more efficient. And, you know, even when you get really low sunlight and you're barely getting any sun on the solar panel, it'll take whatever power it comes off at, whatever voltage, and magically make it happen for that battery. And, oh, my God. I have a single 175-watt panel on my truck roof to run all the gear that's on 24/7 in the vehicle. And, boy, what a wonderful thing. Back to that W2TGT.
Well, I agree with you, Gordon. I think it's a great thing to have. I don't use the solar power because it's in my shack, and there isn't that much sun right in my shack. But I guess I could finagle something out the window. I like it. Some people kind of gawk at the price. I understand that. Some people don't need featureitis. I even like the fact that I can run a USB to a computer and have on screen the status of a charge and such. So I think it's a very nice piece of kit.
Yeah, I didn't even get to that. So, yeah. So it also has a the same features, essentially, as their, what their other battery management system is. Not the one that cycles power, but the one that measures current and voltage and has an application. I forget what that thing's called, but oh my God, what a wonderful piece of equipment. I've got some of the other things too, those little voltage and power and current monitoring systems, but being able to run it off to a laptop. What I really need to do is I need to run it off to a Raspberry Pi and record it there and go from there, but I just haven't written the code yet to do that. I wonder if anyone else has, but either for the Epic Power Gate or for the other device, that would be great. Anyway, back to that W2TTT. You had a couple of good topics tonight.
Yes, indeed, Gordon, and it's because people participating. People have all kinds of interesting little questions, and questions lead to more questions that lead to more questions, so you can go down the rabbit hole. I think it's a real nice addition to my shack, and I certainly like the way to interface with it with USB. I am willing to bet you there's got to be some guy out there. I don't know if he published anything, but there are so many Raspberry Pis, and there are so many hams with Raspberry Pis, that someone must have finagled this connection.
Amen. Amen, amen. Real quick, I know Rich was ill a couple of weeks back. How's he doing?
Which Rich are we talking about?
Oh, Lord, now I'm drawing a blank. I saw it online that he was ill, though.
Are you talking about N2EO?
Yes, N2EO, thank you.
Okay, unfortunately, N2EO became a silent key. I believe it was July 1st that he suffered a heart attack and passed away.
Ouch. I'm sorry to hear that. That's two. It's been a tough year. My wife said if 2020 was described in the form of a drink, it would be described as a colonoscopy prep drink.
AC2GS, WB2GXM. I am saddened by Rich's loss, N2EO.
As we all are, Rich. It wasn't only good old Dick and Rich, Hal. He was an interesting character. K6DPZ passed away about a month earlier, I believe. So this has been a really crappy year so far on so many different levels. It's amazing.
Oh, God, VPZ, the guy who's got that huge collection of radio equipment?
Yes, indeed. He was the guy, if you Googled a guy with a plane in his driveway, that would only show him. He became ill and ended up in a hospice and a nursing facility and passed away. I think he had a stroke at the end.
Good Lord, and I know so many who are older than those guys who've recovered and are doing fine, but God, it's tough. It's just been a tough year. Well, Dick Nadel was the kind of guy I hid my QST magazine when it was small inside of, let's say, an English book during English class in high school, and read about his adventures way back when. So when I was actually junior high school, for that matter. Anyway, 73. I'm going to listen out, and I'm going to I'll be listening. I've been talking too much. W2TTT.
Question KD2OGB.
Yes, Greg.
Now that you just mentioned Hal, what happened to his 17 grand? Did the feds eventually get that, or they didn't get it?
I do not know for a fact. Usually the wheels of government grind exceedingly slowly. Usually, in my past experience, reading after the fact, from the time that the FCC tells you got a bill to the time that you actually pay it is years and years. So I don't think it even went through most of the court. My surmise is there's not much of an estate left. So the federal government is probably going to move on to something else rather than abuse family members. I don't believe he had any children. I could be wrong. He had an ex-wife, but I don't think there was any money left.
Somebody said that I think his daughter might have to pay it because I think she was the one to sell what was left of his stuff. I could be wrong on that, but somebody said that otherwise once at Hamfest.
Okay, it could be possible. It's not like I knew Hal a great deal. I was actually at the Hamfest at the entrance when he walked in dressed as a pirate and tried to gain entrance against other people's wishes. So I've seen him under weird circumstances. I hope that the family isn't badgered by the FCC. It's not their fault what he might have done. So, like I said, government runs real slow. I don't know if they were able to squeeze 17,000 out of those auctions that they sold a lot of that gear that everyone saw pictures of on his website.
Dressed as a pirate, very funny, but playing stupid. His license actually is still active, but expired and has 2 years left before full expiration.
Well, that's the nature of things. Almost no one contacts the FCC and tells them that the person passed on. Sometimes, if you're somewhat important, QRZ has heard of you, and they'll post that it's a silent key website from that point on. But a lot of people don't really register on the databases of passing away. They just fade away, unfortunately.
Well, I can see it as a memorial, I suppose. I mean, N2EO doesn't say silent key yet, but I ought to tell him that I'm on the railroad, but there's nothing else left, so I'll just leave it at that. You carry on, KD2OGB.
Okay, well, enough with rumor mongering. Craig, you thought you might come up with a question by now. Did a question hit you?
Having a trail of thought. Not yet. I'll figure something out and I'll come on if I get something struck in me. So, continue on.
Okay, very well. Once again, this is AC2GS. My name is Roy, and I am net control operator for this, the Limark Technical Net. If you have any questions of a technical nature, if you have any topics you would like to discuss, comments you'd like to make of a technical nature, please give me your first name and your call sign.
KD2INX, I have a question.
Yes, what's your first name?
His name is Bob.
Bob?
Bob, B-O-B. Bravo, Oscar, bravo.
Okay, very good, Bob. What's your question or topic tonight?
Provocation. I'm receiving both your east and your west, your east and your west repeaters at the same signal strength, and I'm out in West Hampton.
Okay, I think that you're seeing the magic of what's called what happens is there's a weather inversion sometimes, and that acts as a corridor for RF. So you have tructal transfer of RF across places that you're not used to. So some people use that on the West Coast to talk to to Hawaii sometimes on 2 meters and 6 meters and such. That's what's going on right now, apparently. There's a lot of pipelines connecting propagations that we usually don't see.
Is that called tropospheric ducting?
Yes, indeed. Thank you very much, Hank. I completely forgot it. Tropospheric ducting.
1YDY, sorry for the ID.
Just wondering. I'm just testing the antenna out, and I noticed that there was a definite S9. And I'm like, why is that? Okay, thank you very much for answering that.
Okay, very good. Once again, this is AC2GS. My name is Roy, and this is the Limark Technical Net. If you have any questions of a technical nature, please give us your first name and your call sign.
KD2NVP with a comment.
Yes, Bob.
Yes, and you were talking about QRZ and the timeliness of registering silent keys. I just verified because I thought I remembered this. John Beck, KC2WGB, is still not listed as a silent key on QRZ. Just wanted to throw that out there. Back to Ned.
Yeah, I mean, unfortunately, that's usually what goes on. Very few people think to bother to notify, QRZ. Sometimes they'll notify the ARRL, but the ARRL isn't going to send out some kind of an email stream or a database upgrade to anyone. So the best that you can get out of the ARRL is about 3 or 4 months later in the magazine, in the page that lists hams that have passed away. And most of the hams that I've known who passed away never get entered into that because no one in the family thinks to contact as something called an American Radio Relay League. So, again, that's you know, the people who are listed as silent keys are the exception to the rule for the most part, unfortunately. It's a shame, but it seems to be a very common thing.
Yeah, copy that. I guess when the family, you know, loses a loved one, that's not their first thing on their mind is to notify the ARRL and, you know, things like that. So, I mean, Dick, it didn't take that long, but maybe he's a little more known or whatever. Somebody decided to report him, and nobody decided to report John. You know, it's just random, I guess. Okay, I'll be listening, and maybe I'll come up with some question or something. Back to Ned. Good job, Roy.
Thank you, Bob. Well, you know, Dick was a celebrity to us, but he was also a celebrity to a bunch of other people. I believe the CQ magazine wrote something about his passing, and the weekly news, amateur radio news, mentioned it. So that information got around a lot more than, say, John or Rich or Hal even. So that's probably why there's a difference with QRZ. If they see a name in the news, then the guy will go over there and change the settings. Otherwise, family members, I think the last thing on their mind is, my gosh, someone has to tell QRZ. So, okay, it's understandable.
Oh, Roy, it's Bob again, KQNBB. Of course, you probably also know what N2EO, I just found out recently it passed. I just heard Andy at CDL talking a week or so ago. But he was in the news earlier. You probably know this, but not everybody else probably does. He was on the ARL weekly news. He somehow got rescued or something by using a handy talkie because he couldn't get to his phone. I guess ultimately he maybe passed away from complications of the same thing, but that must have been, I don't know, a few weeks ago. So you probably know what I'm talking about. Anyway, back to Ned.
Yeah, unfortunately, Richie was kind of bedbound towards the end, and he had a need for home attendance. You know, they had, I guess he had 3 8-hour shifters, and I think there was a time that one of them didn't show up, and so he was by himself, and his cell phone wasn't close to hand. The closest thing he had in his bed was his handy talkie. I believe he had a ID-51A. He had become enamored with a D-Star and such, and so I think he used that to get help.
Yeah, I think it made the news because I don't remember the details. Like it went somewhere, hit someone that was kind of remote. I'm not sure of this. It might have been a network of repeaters or something, and then called back to a local, and he got help in the hospital. So anyway, I don't know if that's related to what he finally passed away from or not, but it obviously happened pretty recently. Okay, back to Ned. I'll be listening.
W2TTT.
Yes, Gordon.
Yeah, that's how I found out about N2EO's health situation, and he used his radio. I don't know if it was an ID-51 or another digital radio, but I think he ended up on a DMR dog group, and somebody at quite a far away was able to summon assistance for him. I didn't realize he was home. I thought he was driving when that happened. That's pretty amazing that he was bedridden and his caregiver didn't show up. It's even more surprising that his caregiver left without handing off to somebody else. That to me is unconscionable, but not surprising. Whoever the service is, you know, may have to answer for that. Anyway, so. Back to net, W2TTT.
I was using a DMR radio. I'm actually looking at it right now, KD2OGB.
Are you sure he was using a DMR radio? I mean, the report could have been a DMR radio. I know he had a hotspot. I also know he had an ID-51, and he really seemed to love Reflector 28.
It says here, when Richard Tashiner, N2EO of Massapequa, New York, suffered a medical emergency on May 18th, his DMR radio was closer than his phone. And it was answered by Maxis, GM0MRJ, who put out a call for anyone in the state. So, yes, it was relayed everywhere. And the repeater he used was 14691.
Okay, very good. Okay, DMR. I knew he had a hotspot, and I knew he had an ID51, so I guess that makes sense. I don't know if he had an actual DMR radio. You can probably use a hotspot to communicate with a fusion radio like that, a D-Star radio. Who knows? Okay, very good. Anyone with any technical questions or topics tonight, please give me your first name and your call sign. I am AC2GS, and my name is Roy.
Roy, I got one, W2TGK.
Okay, Gordon.
Okay, this is on behalf of Alpha Charlie 2 Zulu Uniform, who lives down in Toms River. He's got a very small lot, and he's contemplating putting up a 20-meter and down mirror, or 20-meter and up in frequency anyway, G5RV, about 36 feet in the air, as an inverted V. And I'm kind of advising against it because, you know, not having 40 and 20, especially with the way band conditions are these days, is pretty limiting. So, given that he's got enough real estate for a, you know, for such an antenna, what alternatives would you suggest that would give him the benefits of 40 meters as well?
Okay, exactly what kind of area does he have available and what kind of elevation?
Well, you know Tom's River, it's flat as a pancake. It's basically sand with an occasional bits of clay and real soil floating around, but Tom's River is essentially sandy turf. If you see grass, it's because someone put in, you know, topsoil, or it's that skaggy, you know, kind of zusha, not even zusha, it's even worse, stuff that crawls along the ground. But anyway, he only has enough room normally for a 20-meter inverted V that has, you know, can be pretty wide, but he's got a small piece of property. So he's thinking about a 20-meter G5RV, and the problem is that he won't get 40 meters out of that, and so I'm wondering what other alternatives he might consider, given the small plot of land he has.
WB2GXM?
Yes, Rich.
I've been doing some research on antennas over the past couple of years, trying to figure out what I want. There's a Hustler BTV. The Hustler BTV is not an expensive antenna. It's a great vertical. It's only 25 feet high. It can mount on a pipe. That might be a good thing for him. He'll also get vertical polarization all the way up to 80 meters to the horizon.
Yeah, and how many radios do you need on it?
You need to put some radios on it, not a lot. I would figure maybe four. And, you know, he could put radios for 40 meters on there. Maybe he doesn't have to stretch them out.
Yeah, of course, you can bend those around all different directions. And that's under the category of more is better. But yeah, okay. That's a BTV. That's a really good answer. If he wanted something vertical, what I was going to suggest is that, you know, he maybe use a, you know, something, or something that's got a little horizontal built into it. Do something like an inverted L, just feed it like an N-fed, and like a 41-foot N-fed, just bend the top, you know, put a stick up and and just a horizontal element at the end and just put some radials under that. There's some other antennas that are out there too. I was thinking, who's that guy, Callum, over in the UK, who's got that one multi-band wire vertical on a pole. I just can't remember what it's called, but he's M0MCX. That's actually another good one, because you get a tuned vertical element for each band you want. Over.
Okay. I mean, there's, as Dick was fond of saying, there's 5,000 different antennas and 5,000 ways of using them. And any one of them will work very well for this guy. So, yeah. Any others? Come on in.
Yeah, I was just looking for some fresh ideas, and the BTV is a real good idea. Thank you.
I forgot to mention it's only $230, which is pretty good. It's a steal for a commercial antenna.
Yeah, it's just called a BTV.
The model is BTV. There's a 6 BTV, which 80, 60, 40, and a 5 BTV, which has the standard 80, 40, 20, 15, and 10.
Okay, but a BTV does 40 and up.
It actually does 80 up to 10. I don't know about the radial situation for 80.
Okay, that's good. That's good. As you said, anybody else have some ideas for a small lot?
I'm looking at the Hustler 5 BTV. Does it have traps? I'm trying to figure out what the design is, because it's a little odd. It seems to have, I don't know if they're radials, but they seem to be positioned in the middle. So maybe it's some form of capacitive hat that they're still operating as.
I know that it has coils, and I know that it has a capacitive hat on the top.
Okay, but it seems to have multiple different radial-like projections in the middle of the element. There's something that looks like a 3, or it could be 4, and I'm missing the one from behind. And then a little bit lower down, there's yet another series of radial-like objects. You know, it's kind of a strange place to put a radial, so it might be operating as a capacitive hat or something.
Could be, but they're not very long at all. The long radials are on the ground. AC2GS, WB2JXM.
Yeah, I would also assume that the number of ground radials, if it's operating as a quarter wave, I don't even know if it's operating as a quarter wave or something else, but if it's operating as a quarter wave, if you get it close to the ground, you're probably going to need more than 4 radials. 4 radials are great if you just need a counterpoise. If you're putting it smack dab next to Mother Earth, you need to shield it from its energy coupling to the ground and being dissipated into it.
No point. I do know that it's a light antenna, which is why you can mount it on a pole. You don't need to mount it on anything more than that. In fact, I was commenting that I should get a tilt down, and the guy who I actually saw it in his backyard says, no, you don't need a tilt down. What you gotta do is lift it up, lay it down, make the adjustment, put it back.
Okay, very good. Yeah, according to the specs I'm reading, it's about 17 pounds total, which is rather light. So that's good. Okay, very good. Verticals are a good option if you're limited with space. It has a great takeoff angle, especially if you don't have any nearby obstructions. And there's, you know, all kinds of interesting finagling that goes on with vertical design. And even if you're going to hang something like an off-sender Wyndham or a NFED, sometimes you can get away with that. It doesn't have to be straight, so you can kind of work it around your area and see how it works for you. And wire is relatively cheap.
Join, thanks for comment.
Yes, Bob.
Roger, the 4BTB is a very good antenna. I have one. It's two pair of radials per band. So depending on if you get the 4BT, 4BT, 5BTB, 6BTB, or 8BTB, you have to make two radials coming off the bottom of the antenna. That's it. Nothing else.
Okay, so it seems to be somewhat like a collinear. What kind of elevation do you have on your vertical? I mean, how close is it to the ground?
It's 10 feet in the air, and I contact everybody.
Okay, I guess 10 feet is enough to not couple to the ground and get too much energy loss. You know, when you're seeing these images of verticals that are mounted smack on the ground, that's where you hear people talking about 30 and 40 different radials spreading out just to shield the ground from coupling.
Well, I drew in a 10-foot grounding rod just for giggles, you know. But, no, it's grounded to Mother Earth. I don't put any antenna up unless it's grounded somehow.
Okay, that's right. But if you put a vertical antenna smack dab on the ground, and even if you have a very nice ground to it, you're gonna get ground coupling of the RF, and it's going to soak a lot of it up. And as Dick used to mention, it heats up the worms during the winter time. So. It's not just a matter of a good earth ground, but a degree of shielding from that coupling that goes on if you abut the edge of a quarter wave vertical right against the ground.
Question, Roy?
Yes.
So is that why we've seen some studies over the last few years showing that an elevated vertical, let's say 5, even 10 feet, but even just as little as 4 or 5 feet off the ground, with keeping the radials that high off the ground, seems to make let's say a couple of dB difference in performance?
I would think so. You can't really blame it on the takeoff angle, because verticals give you a very nice takeoff angle even at ground position. But by raising it up, you get a degree of decoupling to the ground and a little bit more efficiency in the amount that gets radiated out.
Okay. Interesting. Yeah, I'm going to figure a way to get a 40-meter vertical 10 feet in the air. And I think the answer is drop a 6x6, like a 16-foot 6x6, 3 feet in the ground, and just... put a ladder up next to it, put the mounting, matching network, at the base, and then get some 4x4s to hold the radials up, and away you go. My wife and I I'm retiring from AT&T next Friday after 33 years, and I'll probably go back to work in 6 months because I really don't want to retire. But in the meantime, job one is to get myself a decent HF ham shack in a warmer climate, probably North Florida somewhere. And so I'm already plotting, because my land here in New Jersey is a 40-foot by 100-foot lot. There's not a lot of room for antennas, although I've managed to jam a bunch on there. But the terrain isn't great either, so... I'm looking forward to having some broad, flat ground to screw with. Anyway, back to net.
Well, Gordon, congratulations on retiring, and I wish you well, and we'll miss you if you move on down south. It seems to me that North Carolina seems to be the destination for a lot of New Yorkers these days. I remember in the olden days, Florida was the place. Then Arizona kind of kicked up as a secondary site, and lately people I talk to talk lovingly of North Carolina. But I wish you well, Gordon.
Well, thank you, Ray. Well, for now we're not moving. It, you know, decision to move is or sell the house up here is not till next spring. Having said that, we might even be inverse snowbirds with just January and February definitely not here, as well as some of the summer months not here. Oddly enough. The idea is that, you know, whatever the wherever work takes me is where our secondary residence is going to be. But we're going to become Florida residents. And, you know, one way or another. And if I get a spiffy job, then, and it's here, and I can telecommute, that's fine too. We'll deal with that. But we're not planning to move, at least at this juncture. Having said that, you look me up in QRZ, you'll see that I've got and I got to update that there's a couple of things in that article that are not current, including my pending retirement. But I'm going to I've had a lot of fun doing a lot of different things and continue to do so. So we'll see what goes, but we'll be around. Don't worry about that. AC2GS, W2GTT.
Okay, very good, Gordon. Yeah, I'm looking at the QRZ page. My QRZ page, I put it maybe a few, two extra pictures. I took a picture of Mission Control during the technical net, my rack of radio equipment and other bits and pieces on my QRZ page. And, you know, talk about a small area to really do the hobby in. My backyard is 20 feet by 25 feet, and I still remember conversations I had with Dick May, rest in peace, where he kept on trying to convince me that I had enough space to put up a 100-foot tower, you know, in an attached on both sides and the back 20 by 25 foot lot of a backyard.
Yeah, well, Dick knew no bounds, which was part of the joy of knowing Dick. But anyway, yeah, we've been members of the Swan Amateur Radio Club and friend of Steve Castro and his wife Sandy for years, so we're going to look at the I-10, I-75 area and kind of go from there. And we'll see what happens. But we've been looking online for a couple of years and watching properties come and go. So we've kind of got a little bit of the rhythm. And we'll just see what happens over the next couple of months. But having somebody like Steve to work with is going to be a pleasure. He said it's nice that someone who's retiring actually comes with a climbing belt that they actually know how to use. Hi.
WA2CDL.
Yes, Andy.
Okay, just for the people out there, you know, I can't stay that much longer. I got to go to work tomorrow. You know, keep in mind, I'm trying to keep this to a technical net and stay away from idle chit-chat that I'm hearing, talking about people in the past, people who passed away, and all that stuff. It's, you know, that's for another discussion at another time. I wanted to do this technical net, but I'm running out of time to do it. So, I mean, this Andy's Corner thing. But I'm running out of time. I don't mean to be rude, but I just, you know, want people to keep in mind, you know, it is a tech net, and we want to keep it that. Back to you, Lloyd.
No problem, Andy. If you can do it now, that would be great.
Okay, because I wanted to reiterate what I did 3 weeks ago. I started a little discussion about decibels, and I wanted to continue the discussion. So if everyone is on board having a discussion of a technical nature, I'll stand by and, you know, we'll proceed.
Don't be rude.
Yeah, verticals aren't technical as decibels. Let's talk decibels. W2CTG.
Please, Andy. Do your Andy's corner, please.
Okay, very good, very good. I know it's easy to get into these discussions. Probably Paul. What's Paul? I forgot Paul's call. He's probably waiting also to do the space report and everything else. Anyway, good evening to everyone on this hot July day. Three weeks ago I started a discussion on decibels, and it's actually out of an article of January of this year, 2020 QST. And I did like half of the discussion because it's actually three and a half pages long. And there's a little bit of math involved. I'm trying to stay away from math because you have to do, with math, you got to do some visualization, and people are not going to be writing things down. So I basically just went over the article, skimmed over it with staying away from the math. But I thought tonight I would start over since due to work restraints, I have to go to work tomorrow, it turns out. Work commitments, I couldn't make the TechNet last week or the week before. So I figured I would start over again for people who missed it, and we can go from there. All right, so this is an article, it's called, and it's a very good article. We use decibels all the time. But we don't usually think about it, and people don't know how to use decibels and where they're used and how they're used and so on and so forth. So this is called Untangling the Decibel Dilemma, which is a very nice way of saying it. And it says decibel measurements are easier to understand than you may realize. So this was written by Ward Silver, N0AX. And I have to remember now to let it drop. I don't want to keep timing it out, so let me let it drop. From time to time, I'll ask questions if anyone has any questions on what I'm going to read. And even I have questions about it. So here we go. This is from the article, and it's a good one. You'll find references to decibels throughout the amateur radio, in particular, and in electronics in general. And for instance, you may hear someone say that their antenna has a 4 dB gain, talking about antennas, you know, or that a particular type of length of coax cable has a 1 dB of matched loss at a given frequency. This tutorial does include math, and because the decibel is a mathematical construct, if you want to dive into the math, that's great. If your understanding will be better for doing so, or I should say, and your understanding will be better for doing so if you dive into the math. On the other hand, if math is not your thing, skip the equations and concentrate on the explanations and tables, which is what I'm going to do. I'll concentrate on that. All right, so we're going to go into the use of decibels. Let me let it drop. Okay, it has to do with our hearing, and Roy understands this better than I, given his field. Use of decibels. Sound intensity or sound pressure level, which is known as SPL, is also specified in decibels. In this case, the reference level of 0 dB corresponds to a pressure of 0.0002 microbars, which is the standard threshold for being able to hear sound. As the sound gets louder, the value of the SPL, or sound pressure level, also increases, indicating an increase with respect to the reference level. So basically, you know, our hearing is on a decibel, works on a decibel scale, not a logarithmic scale. You probably noticed that listening to a certain note at a certain pressure level will sound different, sound louder. I should say louder than another note. And that's the way our hearing works. I'll just pause any questions regarding that. Okay. All right, continuing this, and so your sound pressure level in the average home is about 50 dB above the 0 dB threshold that serves as the sound pressure level reference. So here's